G'day everyone, welcome to the Queensland Seafood Industry Association podcast series. Thank you for joining us again, and today's discussion is around the vessel tracking working group and some of the issues that have come up within that group. So my guests today include Mark Cook from the Fisherman's Portal. How are you, Mark?
Good, mate.
And also with us is Michelle Jensen. How are you, Michelle?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Eric.
So Mark and myself are on this group representing our respective organisations, so the Portal and QSIA. And Michelle, you are on the group, obviously, because of your background in industry. But yourself and Mark have another level of distinction in that you brought to the attention of the Ombudsman what was going on with vessel tracking. So before we get into the discussion, I think we need to start at the beginning. I'll start with you, Michelle. What, I guess, pushed it over the line for you to approach the Ombudsman some time ago?
It really started when the vessel tracking went through, and I put an RTI request in to get some information about the way that the proposal for vessel tracking had gone through with the Productivity Commission and whatnot, because I wasn't convinced, I guess, that proper processes had been followed, because I didn't feel that there had been enough consultation about it. And when those documents were released, and it became pretty clear that that was definitely the case, that there was definitely not a proper process followed, not in my opinion anyway, that's when I put a complaint into the Queensland Ombudsman. And once I did that, I realised, and you know, after being in touch with other fishermen, that there were other fishermen who were doing the same thing at the same time. And so those complaints got pulled in together with the permission of the complainants, obviously, and sort of dealt with as one complaint. So there, I guess that's what probably pushed me to put that complaint in, was just, I guess, wanting to see that proper process and find out why it didn't go that way.
Same question to you, Mark. Why pursue a complaint through the Ombudsman from a Fisherman's Portal point of view?
What happened, I spoke to the Portal and we had a lot of complaints from fishermen about the provider's business activities, where he was asking for money up front, not showing anybody a contract. You had to pay for the money before you got to see the contract. And then when you paid the money, fishermen were purchasing the units, you know, 6 months prior to the rollout, and they weren't receiving their units after being paid for four, five, 6 months after. When I contacted the department and asked them, this is not acceptable, they went out and said to us that he doesn't have to give you a confirmed date. He also has to do extra pre-programming for the units, so he doesn't have to repay the $206.50 for his installation. I asked him numerous times to turn up to my place. He gave me dates and everything. He never turned up. I wasn't the only fisherman. And then Queensland Fisheries gave me a statement stating that a provider does not have to refund the $206.50 for installing the units. Numerous members rung him. And then he said, I don't have to install the meeting unit because it was a typo. And we got about 15 different answers, right? But he collected $206.50. It was in the VMS policy that this provider had to install the units. So after contacting that, I contacted the provider, the manufacturer, and I said, is this true that he has to do extra pre-programming on these units? And he says, what programming? He doesn't know what I was talking about. I went back to the fisheries, asked them again, and they said it's all fine, and he just gave us more the same excuses again. Now, that's when since I've been also in business for a long time, I knew that I could go and contact the Ombudsman and make an official complaint, because the department was not didn't even want to listen to us. So that's what happened. And then we started from there. We actually went to the first meeting with the Ombudsman on the 14th to the 12th, 18, before it even rolled out, because the issues were very serious from day one, and that's how it all started rolling out from there. And we had to provide proof of what the antics are up. Then we found out the units were not what they were advertised. They're all supposed to have internal batteries that lasted 30 days, according to the vessel tracking unit approval list, which is Queensland stamped. Asked Queensland Fisheries about that. Don't know what you're talking about. All the units are exactly, and they do have a 30-day battery. That's where it all started. Went to the Ombudsman and we just kept on providing proof. And then we had a lot of issues with the units malfunctioning. We had units that were smouldering as they were installing them. Then we had YB3I units. Well, they were rusting out in 14 days after the provider tampered with the wiring loom without the manufacturer's knowledge or approval. This is what caused a lot of trouble with the units, and it made them not fit for purpose. Then it just went on from there. Then we had to provide proof. If we provided proof too quickly, the department would come back and call it premature evidence. So we had to give them 3 months notice. And then we proceeded. The Ormiston sent them the first lot of complaints. And then Michelle's were added into the complaint. She went her complaint. And then we found out Queensland Fisheries are ignoring us still. And they didn't even respond back. They were 45 days late from responding back to me on the time that the Ormiston quoted.
Okay, so we have now what is an introduction to the bigger process here, and by that I mean the development of a vessel tracking working group, and we'll get on to some of the questions I have there, and I'm a member as well, so I'll have a view that I can share on this. But let me go to Michelle, if I can, Mark, for a moment now. When your combined efforts and all of the industry groups complained about this, but not to the degree that you both did, and so you led the charge here, which again, I thank you on behalf of industry, because we all needed to step up and you guys took the lead. So that's worth noting here. I guess the other issue that I want to explore a little, if I could, with you, Michelle, is when the Ombudsman's report came out, what struck you? What were the, say, top three things that made you think about this issue in a lot more detail from that report? And I'll put the same question to you, Mark, but let's start with Michelle first. So the Ombudsman's report, what did you think? What were those top three issues that really got to you?
I think there was quite a lot of recommendations, but I think the thing that struck me the most on the first phone call that I had from them to tell me that the complaint had been finalised, the first thing that I was struck by, I guess, was the fact that we had been validated in our complaint on everything that we complained about, because for such a long time we were not able to get any answers from fisheries, or they were quite PC answers, you know, and they never really answered the questions that we were asking them. And so some of those things, if you're saying top three, were the acknowledgement that there hadn't been any further assessment done, and that question from the Ombudsman to the fisheries, or, well, why haven't you done that? Another thing that was, I thought, was pretty striking was the safety issues, and Mark is definitely across those safety issues and those technical issues a lot more than I am. That's definitely his forte. But to, again, have those issues validated for us and have someone from the outside looking in going, no, you guys aren't making this up, because I feel that that's something that we often get from fisheries, that sort of brush off, you know, that feeling of, well, what are you complaining about? But to have somebody else, another authority, look at it and say, no, there's a safety issue there, and that is really legitimate, and that acknowledgement that they really hadn't taken the care or showed a duty of care to the industry that was required. I mean, obviously some of these boats are going pretty far out to sea, so that's a pretty big thing. And then the other thing that really struck me again as well was just the questioning and the acknowledgement of some of the process that happened. And for example, the way that the department had sort of based the entire fisheries, across all fisheries, ability to repay on an imagined price of $60 a kilo for mud sort of was just pulled from thin air. And to have somebody else, again, look at that and go, well, hang on a minute, where did that come from? Because we'd been asking and never got a response for that, you know. And so I guess they're just some of the examples. The process and the safety, I think, by the top ones for me. And then that acknowledgement that money had definitely been spent by the department to reimburse fishers, and there was a question around whether that was a proper process as well. I guess they're probably the top three. But I think overall the whole thing is just indicative of the way that industry is sort of treated all the time. And this goes back a long time through all of our fisheries for decades, really, where I think there's a lot of issues in fisheries that need dealing with. And I mean, right now, for example, we've got quotas, we've got trawl zoning, we've got Spanish mackerel, we've got vessel track. There's all these different issues. But essentially, one of the biggest problems that we have overall is that processes aren't happening correctly within the department. And until we can get those processes happening the way that they should be happening and have impact assessment happening the way that it should be happening, we're not going to get good outcomes for our fisheries. We need to have best practice happening in the department to get best outcomes for us as an industry.
Sure. Thank you, Michelle. And I hope, because I know our friends at Fisheries Queensland and government will be listening to this podcast. Well, I hope they will. And so that's a very good summary. So over to Mark, what would be your top three issues here that you drew from that Ombudsman report?
Well, one is the reliability units. They were not what was stated in their policy of their testing. They're supposed to vigorously tested these units for 10 months. They state that they only had one issue with one spot tray, stating that was a installation problem. But within the first 3 weeks of the rollout, we had spot traces smouldering on fire, not transmitting. Batteries were melting together to the outside. The patch leads were rusting out because they were copper wire patch leads, which weren't even lasting a month in the environment, especially on the small vessels. Righto. Fisherman's Portel, Michelle went the process way. What I really did is I took a lot of stuff from all the fishermen complaints. I collaborated it all together and I come up with all the malfunctioning and I was processing them to the ombudsman and saying, well, this is the problem we got. These units are clearly not fit for purpose. When they released their report, which was 45, 50 days late, released their report, there was about 23 issues, I think. And all the issues that they tried to answer, we could prove that they were false. After we proved it, of course, they went back to them continually and continually. And then because they didn't answer all the stuff, they ended up getting the final one of 55 breaches. No cooperation from them, no nothing. And they're still to this date. They don't want to answer any emails, et cetera, especially with me.
Let's move to the next phase of this. So as a result of, and this is just for the sake of those that are listening to this, because we've been in the process, but for those that are looking at this and listening to this discussion from the outside looking in, the Ombudsman's report led to the creation of a vessel tracking working group. And I'll give a perspective, given that I'm one of many commercial members on that group. I think without that report, there would be no way in hell that we would have had a vessel tracking working group. And I am convinced to this day that the department came to this reluctantly. And, you know, people will ask for evidence of that. And very recently we received an email from the department that outlined just why I think what I think is the case. And you always want to look for proof of these things. So a way to sort of segue into that, and if you'll allow me, Michelle and Mark, just to read from an email again, just the critical bit here about why have a vessel tracking working group and why seek industry input when the following was provided to industry. So I'll just read this out. This is from Fisheries Queensland to the working group. We would like to provide an update about the vessel tracking post implementation review. Now, this review, for those that are listening, and we'll put some details as what to a PIR, is in the podcast description. We could have avoided this if we'd had a regulatory impact statement at the start, but that's a whole other discussion. So just to continue this particular email, the consultation PIR report was submitted to the Office of Best Practice Regulation, the OBPR, in April this year for review. And we have received feedback from the OBPR over a week ago. We're updating the report based on OBPR feedback, and we will resubmit for further review. Once a letter of adequacy is obtained, we will progress to the Minister for approval to release for public consultation. We will send a notification once we have confirmed the consultation period. Now, in reading this, we in the working group were told that this was going to be a process that began toward the end of January this year, and to be told now that their report was only given to that office in April for review, so just a shocking lack of process, or at least clarity to the members of the working group. Because someone like me who works for an industry body, I get paid to be at these meetings because it's part of my job. For those industry operators that were in that room, that was time that you took out of your businesses to be there. So very little respect shown to the people in the room. I'll go to a question here before I read the last component of this email that was a real kick in the guts, at least from an industry perspective. Can you confirm for me and for the sake of the listeners that at no time has the working group or any member of the working group outside of the government members and potentially the consultant group that they've got involved in this, at no time have we seen what's gone into this draft PIR, or we will only see the outcome of that after the minister's confirmed it? So, Michelle, is that correct?
Yes. we didn't see a draft of the review. There was a PowerPoint presentation at one point that gave us a bit of an overview of what would go into a PIR, but it was, I guess, more or less a regurgitation of the guidance documents that they provide about what goes into a PIR and a little bit of information about what might go in there, but there wasn't really any great level of detail. Certainly, we weren't privy to any of the questions that are supposed to be answered, the difficult questions that were supposed to be answered that were, and there was nothing in there also regarding alternative ways to meet the objectives of the proposal, which you would expect to see in a review, or you would at least expect to see it in a RIS. But because a PIR is kind of like a RIS, would look at those things, but very much from the get-go, it was, you know, a government perspective.
Just to confirm another thing that came from the department, this is to do with consultation. We would like to provide more information about small group meetings during public consultation. The small group meetings will be run in multiple one-hour sessions with 5 people max per session. A small group settings would enable a more effective dialogue to collect feedback from fishers about the PIR. Additional engagement sessions, face-to-face or virtual, will be arranged if there is a high level of interest booked out scenario in a location. Just to confirm for those who are listening, particularly from industry, every group that was in that room, MBSIA, the portal and QSIA, asked for and insisted for open public industry meetings. Is that correct, Mark?
That is absolutely correct.
My question, and I'll go to Michelle on this, what do they fear about having an open set of port meetings?
I don't have any trouble if somebody wants to have a small group meeting. You know, I think there is an appetite for industry to have it as open port meetings, because that way everyone can see what is being said to everyone. And I feel, especially after relation to quotas and some of those changes in the fishery strategy, there were small meetings for that. And I feel that people felt as if they'd been told one thing in the meeting and then heard something else later on, and that their consultation and their feedback didn't seem to, you know, get taken into account. So, and I think that that is in part really due to the loss of trust. Like I said, if somebody prefers to have a small group meeting or a one-on-one meeting, well, it shouldn't be ruled out either. But for those that don't feel comfortable with that, I think it's a bit disappointing that seems to be off the table for fisheries.
Mark, your view?
We don't trust those groups of 5 meetings, because whatever's being said in those meetings, it does not get taken back to the department, and they have such an easy avenue of ignoring and pretending to write it down for any important information, and they ignore it. The trust of this department has gone. No fishermen trust this department. We need the port meetings where everybody can chat at the same time, as Michelle said before, so everybody can see everybody's views. The views that are in these small meetings will be harvested to what they want to release. That's what the portal's review on that. At least if we get the open group meetings, the other fishermen will get to see everybody's hearings, and they say, well, that's a great idea.
I think what I'm hearing more and more, and this is a function of just one of the most I'm trying not to swear here, one of the worst consultation processes I think I've ever seen in almost 20 odd years plus of working around these kinds of issues and seeing them rolled out. There is no trust anymore, and the commentary that we're hearing from Mark and what you're saying, Michelle, suggests that they're a long way. This is Fisheries Queensland from having a process that can be trusted, and these one-on-one sets of interviews have all sorts of problems for us. As an example, and this is something that I think you both might relate to, and for the sake of those that are listening, in the Spanish mackerel feedback process that was just recently closed, there were those small meetings along the coast. I'm pretty sure none of the groups were formally invited to any of those meetings. At least I didn't see an invite. I don't know if you did, Mark.
No, we didn't get any invites.
Okay, so there were meetings that we found out secondhand, and they were set up by the department with particular individuals. Now, as you say, Michelle, there is no problem if a group of fishermen want to go meet with the department. That's fine. But on something as big as the potential changes that are coming for a fishery, you would expect that there would be more of an open process. And given the amount of the amount of issues that have been raised by not just us, but the recreation on charter fishers in that fishery, you would have expected as open and transparent a process as you can get. They don't do that. I don't know whether it's not in the DNA of the department or they're just worried about what they're going to get if they front up in a public way. And it's a little disturbing, and it just creates a sense, at least amongst the industry. I will not speak for the recreational fishing sector or the charter fishing sector, but it's suboptimal. It's a very bad way to go, and it's led to the situation that we've got. And I don't think any fair-minded person would come at us to say, well, hey, that's the best that they can do. No, it's far from the best that they can do. And it's not acceptable, I think, in this particular process. Now, I think we need to keep talking about this, and we will have other people on the podcast to talk about vessel tracking. And at some point in the future, I'm hoping we can get Michael Woods to come and join us. He couldn't make it today, but that's okay, because I think this conversation is going to be nuanced and there's more issues to be brought in. Mark, before we end what would be part one of this discussion, any final thoughts around where you think the PIR is going to go, without necessarily knowing what because we can't comment on what's in the PIR, because we don't know what the final questions or issues they're going to raise. We're just going to get told what they are. Where do you think this is going to go? Just looking a crystal ball look at this.
Oh, well, we all know that. It'll only be in favour of the department. We all know this will happen. Yes, that's all I can say. We can't say too much till we actually get to read it. Well, from past history, it's always in favour of the department, never in favour of industry.
Michelle?
Look, I've got to say, I really agree with Mark. And my concern, and one of my biggest concerns, has always been the safety of the units and making sure that they are fit for purpose. And in being fit for purpose, the main issue is safety and the reliability that they're going to continue to work. And we all know that some of these units are not that great. They're cheap units. I mean, you do get what you pay for. And my concern, as I've said to you guys, and I've said it in the working group, has always been, what are we going to do in order to get a fit-for-purpose unit? If this has to continue and they want us to continue to have vessel tracking, to get a fit-for-purpose unit, my concern is that they're going to want us to use something that is more expensive, or, you know, to the point that it's out of the cost efficiency for businesses. I mean, we already know right now that fishing businesses are really struggling. We've had these reforms. I'm yet to come across a fisherman who's told me that the reform's been fantastic for them. You know, I don't hear anybody jumping around about being more profitable and, you know, how their efficiencies are just so fantastic and they're doing so well. In these times, I think with the rising cost of fuel, rising cost of living and other expenses and everything else that goes into fishing, I think the cost is really important and of vessel tracking. And, yeah, that is the concern for me, is that, you know, what is going to be the next generation of vessel tracking if we don't tolerate the crap that we've been given and told to have, then what's the next generation of vessel tracking going to look like? Is it going to be more expensive? You know, and I don't think that there's, regardless of any information that we could put forward about cost affordability and reliability and safety, I don't think they care, to be honest. I don't think they care, as long as they're getting their data at the end of the day. So I don't think they really care how it looks for us on our end.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give my perspective on this. I'm a bit less generous as you've been. I think they don't give a stuff about this industry, and they continue to prove that. And more to Mark's point, and I wish this wasn't the case, but I think we've already got evidence, and they've made this public, and I'm happy to share this in the podcast description. There is a 5-page PDF that is put on the Vessel Tracking Working Group website. And on page 3 of that document, the second paragraph under the heading Review of Units says the following: Fisheries Queensland has not been able to significantly demonstrate that the spot trace and rock fleet units are not fit for purpose, as indicated by some industry members. Whilst Fisheries Queensland acknowledge the unit reliability concerns raised by industry members in the working group, Fisheries Queensland has also heard positives about the units from other industry members. And there you have it, folks. There is the outcome of any PIR, that some people in industry have had no issues with it, so it's all good. Nothing to see here. We'll shift the cost of any new units in the future onto industry. It is such a bullshit process. Sorry, guys. This is just a nightmare of a process, and it's not going to get any better. And I think if we want it to, we need industry to respond as many industry people as we can to respond to this and to make politicians aware that this is just a bullshit process. There's no better technical way to say that. This is a disgrace of a process, and it's under the watch of our current minister.
When we look at the report there, the new reliability statement that come out, they've only used the recent stuff from Polestar and Pivotal. They conveniently left the other provider, right, out of the whole game. That's where it all started from the start, right? That's all. I just grab a little bit of stuff and they'll go with that little bit, but don't worry about the other 90% of the thing. Also, Michelle, I don't know if you mentioned it, it's also the safety about the machines when they're catching on fire and, you know, the cost to industry when you have fishermen up in the Gulf that got to wait for 12 days to send it to a unit to the Gold Coast to get confirmation it's not polling. Who pays for the blooming industry's losses?
Well, not Fisheries Queensland, Mark, that's for sure.
We all know what's coming our way. Nothing to say, yeah, we're an innocent little people, which they're not.
Michelle Jensen, Mark Cook, thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Eric.
No worries, Eric.
For those listening, this has been the QSIA podcast series. Thank you for joining us. We will have more to say on vessel tracking, and thanks again. We'll catch everyone on the next podcast.